You're tuned to Focus on Campus, a weekly show which highlights faculty, staff, and students here at the University of Texas at El Paso. Good morning, I'm Luis Sainz, your host for Focus on Campus, and joining us today is David Smith Soto. David is a colleague here at work. He is a professor of multimedia journalism, writing, and photography. And today we're going to talk a little bit about an exhibit that's coming up soon. But first, we're going to meet David, the man behind the professor, behind the lens. David, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thank you, Louis.
Now, you and I have discussed a lot of interesting stories about you and growing up, but our audience may not be familiar with that because we did talk a little bit about it when Mike was here, Mike Mitchell. Your friend, who we can talk a little bit about later on, but you came from Costa Rica to the United States at a very young age. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. My dad was a lawyer. He worked for an international organization, but he used to say that if it hadn't been for Adolf Hitler, I wouldn't have been born anywhere, much less Costa Rica. Because when he was 20 years old, he joined the army to go fight the Nazis during World War II. And the Army, in its infinite wisdom, sent him to Central America, Costa Rica, for most of the war. And he met my mom in Costa Rica. I got married, and I was born at the end of the war in 1945. Then he came back to Washington, D.C., and got a law degree, started working for an international organization, the Organization of American States. They had an academy for tropical agriculture in Costa Rica. Place called Turrialba, which is where I grew up with my two brothers and sisters. Up until 1958, we moved back to Washington, D.C. at that point.
Now, tell me a little bit about, because you say you were born in 1945, and people talk a lot about how America was very united, and you see the Greatest Generation, all that stuff. And so what did you see when you came to the United States after the war, and was there a lot of patriotism, people working together? How different was it from today?
Well, I got back to Washington in 1958, and that was it was an interesting time. Of course, there was a post-war boom in the U.S., the suburban construction boom. A lot of guys like my dad went to college on a GI Bill after World War II, so there was a tremendous resurgence of professionalism, academics, kids like him who grew up in Washington. His dad was a shopkeeper, probably would never have had the chance to go to college if it hadn't been for the GI Bill. So the war gave a lot of these young men and women a tremendous exposure to the rest of the world, which is why my dad, who basically grew up in Washington, D.C., decided to go into an international organization, learn Spanish, move to Costa Rica, and, have it develop his family there.
Now, when you moved to Washington, if I remember correctly, you said you felt very alone, lonely, and you met your friend Mike there.
Right.
But you had something that kept you going. Today we hear about the kids having their iPods and their smartphones, all that stuff, but you had something else.
Well, exactly. My dad, like I said, was a lawyer, but he was an amateur photographer as well. So I grew up with walking around with him taking pictures in Costa Rica. When I turned 9, he gave me a Box Brownie camera, which is my first camera. And I used to walk around the city taking pictures, and I've never stopped. When I came to the U.S., I went into a junior high school in suburban Maryland, and I was an alien there, as it were. I spoke perfect English in a world where nobody spoke perfect English. So I stood out, and photography brought me together with Mike Mitchell. We both lived in the same part of suburban Maryland, and we took the same bus back home, so we became friends, and I turned him on to photography, put the first real camera in his hands. He's become very famous for his photographs of the Beatles in 1964, their first U.S. concert, but he's had a lifetime of photography, and that's kept us together as friends all these years, going way back to junior high school.
David, you said your dad would walk around taking pictures, and then so when you got the camera, you started doing the same thing. And the name of your exhibit that we're going to talk about in a bit, I think, is called Street Pictures?
Yeah, it's called My Street Photography.
My Street Photography.
54 to 2014.
So people wonder, okay, David, so you and your dad would go around taking pictures. What do you look for as a photographer? When you're walking down the street, do you just take maybe 100 and maybe five of them would be good? Or
yeah, you take a lot of pictures, but street photography is an actual genre within art photography. And the great journalistic photographers of the 20th century, Cartier-Bresson and many others like him, started out shooting pictures in the street. And actually what changed photography back in the 1920s was the invention of the Leica 35mm camera. In the hands of somebody like Cartier-Bresson, became an instrument to stop time. His motto was a decisive moment. And a whole generation, several generations of photographers have been looking for that decisive moment in the street. Robert Frank, for example, in the early 1950s, in his book The Americans, documented post-war America from a very interesting point of view, showing segregation and poverty as well as some patriotism by shooting street scenes. He got a Guggenheim Fellowship to travel the country and shoot these pictures. That was a transformational book in photography, actually, by Robert Frank. So legions of photographers like myself, we call ourselves street photographers because we're looking for the human story in the streets where you're able to take photographs, at least in this country, without any issues. It's totally legal. You don't have to worry about the police stopping you because you're taking a picture like you do in some countries. So it's all part, again, of the idea of freedom of expression that the United States is famous for.
What about the subjects, David? Because the police may not stop you, but some people may be hesitant about taking their picture.
Oh, yeah. No, I tell my students, shoot first and then run like hell. In other words, you don't want to argue with anybody about it, but I've only had a couple of encounters where somebody stopped and said, hey, what are you doing? Usually I'm photographing situations where people are totally unaware that I'm there. So the idea, my motto is to see with the camera and not leave any trace behind. In other words, don't touch it. Don't mess with what's going on. Just go there, see it with the camera, and move on. Later in the darkroom or today in the computer, you work an image like that and you create a work of art.
So tell us about your exhibit that's opening up in October, in the
23rd.
The 23rd of October.
Yeah.
And because of what you just mentioned, the darkroom and computer, tell us how that affects photography and some of the pictures that you've taken and you're going to be exhibiting from over the years.
Well, sure. Well, the advent of digital photography has been transformative. It's as important, in my opinion, as the invention of photography in the early 19th century. What's happened is that instead of curtailing photography, it's multiplied it dynamically, internationally, to the point that trillions of images are floating back and forth on the internet every day. It's also been a tremendous tool for freedom of expression throughout the world. Whole revolutions have started because of photography and video being transmitted on the internet. So within that transformative situation, if you bring it right down to journalism and art photography, and journalism has created a tremendous amount of freedom as well. You photograph something digitally, you transmit it instantly to a website or the newspaper or the TV station, whoever's going to use it, and it runs. So it's taken a lot of the busy work, the chemistry, the physics of the thing out of the picture, facilitated it. In art photography, which is what I'm talking about when I say street photography, it's connected to journalism historically, like I said before, but it's its own thing, and the digital world has made it more convenient, easier, and especially with color photography. If you look at art photography before digital, you're going to see that the vast majority of photographers were shooting black and white photographs simply because they had more control in a darkroom over the image. With color photography, you had very little control over the image unless you had virtually industrial setups in order to manage the processing of the image. Today, color is easier than black and white. So you have fantastic opportunities to shoot photographs in the street or anywhere, whatever you want, put it in the computer using Photoshop, which is the standard computer program for digital image processing, and do virtually anything with it without having to go into a dark room and immerse yourself in chemistry fumes. So I'm a big proponent of digital photography. A lot of photographers are still using film and chemistry. It's a craft, an art craft unto itself these days. And I think that's wonderful. So the people who want to do film photography and process it in a darkroom can still do it and have fun with that. But in today's world, especially if you're thinking about journalism, which is what I teach, digital is the way to go. And in the classes that I teach, I'm teaching them basics of photography so that when they walk into a newsroom, they can say, yes, I know how to use a professional camera, and I know how to process my image professionally in Photoshop. That's the goal of the courses I teach in photography.
For people who go see your exhibit on the 23rd, tell us, what can they expect to see, David? You showed us some of these pictures, and they're incredible.
Right. Well, what I've been doing, like I said, I started shooting as a child, but photography was really what opened the door for me in journalism. My first job I got as a photographer and a sports writer at a small newspaper in Winchester, Virginia, Shenandoah Valley, back in 1970. And I've photographed some things for newspapers, some things on my own. Generally speaking, trips that I was sent on to do journalism, or later when I was doing public relations, I traveled a lot in Latin America, Europe, and the Middle East. And so my photographs are from all these different places I've been. They're urban photographs. So street photography, as the name implies, by its very nature, is urban photography.
It's interesting, too, when you talk about time and how it freezes time, you go back and you look at those pictures and you go, wow, I remember that. And we were doing that last week when my son turned 24, and we were looking at the videos, home videos, and go, wow, how things have changed. And you have a picture where you took one, and then 50 years later, you went to the same spot, and it's very different.
Yeah, exactly. When I graduated from high school, a friend of mine and I decided to take off for Europe. In those days, it wasn't unusual for high school graduates or college students to backpack in Europe. It was a thing to do. So we bought two backpacks, took Icelandic Airlines to Luxembourg, and then from there we hitchhiked and trained our way down through Spain all the way to North Africa, Tangier, and then back to Madrid, where I stayed a couple of months sitting in cafes, drinking wine, and writing poetry on napkins, taking pictures in the street. So one place that I photographed was a particular corner. I just happened to be there in Madrid, 1964, and I took a picture which I really loved. So I've had it hanging all this time. This summer I had the opportunity to go back to Madrid, so I thought it would be really interesting to go back to the very same corner and photograph it again, which I did. The 1964 picture shows a group of kids playing, and this was during the Franco dictatorship. They look like kids that could have been 19th century in the way they were dressed. And so it's a very old-fashioned image. The new one that I shot shows two older women running with a flock of pigeons trying to get out of their way. Different feel. Still a black and white picture, but this one, of course, I took with a digital camera, not a film camera.
Now, this exhibit opens on October 23rd, but in addition to your photography, this is also going to be, there's also going to be one of Mike's pictures there to help Borzine?
Yeah, exactly. Like I said before, Mike has become actually world famous as the Beatles photographer because he took photographs when he was 18 years old of the Beatles' first concert in Washington, D.C., where we lived. And he and I used to go around Washington again in the streets photographing everything, and he got an assignment, a freelance assignment from the local Washington magazine to shoot the Beatles concert. And so many years later, these photographs are totally unique. They're shot beautifully. And they were the original prints were sold at Christie's for $400,000. He's given me one of those prints as a gift, not the original one, but a copy of a new edition to give to UTEP, basically, so that we can sponsor some internships, journalism internships, and newspapers and media throughout the country.
Well, David, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us here today. We've been visiting with Professor David Smith Soto, who is going to have a photo exhibit of some of his work beginning October 23rd. And if you have additional questions, you can go to utep.edu and then find out about the events. Thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thank you, Louie.
Focus on Campus is taped and produced at KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Nolan Martinez. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Focus on Campus. I'm Louis Sainz.